RP3 is ready to step his game up and grab the mic for the latest edition of the Rap Game Podcast. Here is Raymond Parts III, better known as RP3.
To be part of a foundation of immense success, legendary success, to be part of something that would become a national program, a perennial powerhouse, is not something many athletes can say they were a part of. But our next guest was exactly part of something that big, that grand, that legendary. She was an outstanding player in Class C, not once but twice at Shady Grove High School. She would go on to play for the Louisiana Tech Lady Texters. In her four-year career, she only went to the Final Four, not once, not twice, not three times, but four times, won two national championships, was named national championship MVP, and was a first-team All-American. She would score over 2,200 points and then went on to a successful business career working for the likes of Coca-Cola and others. And later this month, she'll be in Natchitoches, and she will be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. It's our privilege to welcome onto the Rap Game Podcast the Lady Texter legend herself, the one and only Angela Turner Johnson. Angela, good day to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a great day out here in Dallas. I'm doing pretty good.
Has it hit you yet that after all this time, after all these years, that you're going to be finally going to take the stage there in Natchitoches and be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame with so many other great athletes, in particular, former great Lady Texters?
I'm truly humbled, and it is just starting to hit me because, as you know, this has been postponed twice. So the first time my emotions were high, and then I was told that, okay, we're postponing it. And then I think in December they rescheduled it, and my emotions were high, and then they had to come down again, you know. So now finally it looks like it's about to happen, and the closer it gets, the more excited I get. And I'm also just very excited to be going in with so many of my teammates and so many other fellow Lady Texters and also my coaches too.
Angela, let's go all the way back. You went to a very small school. Class C is the smallest classification here in the state. And you went to a small rural school at that, Shady Grove High. When did you first fall in love with basketball?
Basketball was my first love because that was the only thing that we had to do being a small school. In my graduating class, we only had 17 students. And in 9th through 12th grade, at one time, there were only 91 students. And so most of the students, they were from the community of Shady Grove, and all of us attended Shady Grove Baptist Church. So it was a small, close-knit community.
So time out, Angela. So everyone that you went to school with, y'all all also went to the same church?
Pretty much, yes. Because we were all pretty much from the same community. So a lot of us went to Shady Grove Baptist Church, and I think there were actually maybe three other churches too that were fairly close to us, but most of us went to Shady Grove Baptist Church.
You were the outstanding player in Class C back-to-back seasons, your junior and senior season. You also helped lead your team to a state championship. What was it like playing in that time, playing girls basketball in the state of Louisiana, and what was the reaction there for your own school? Did people come out in the community come out and support you guys? What was that like playing women's basketball, girls basketball at that time?
Oh, they came out. You know, once we started winning, our gym would be packed every single game. I'm sure if the fire marshal would have come through there, he probably would have had some people to leave, but our gym was packed out. People were excited, not only in the Shady Grove community, but also in the surrounding communities. And we had this rival with Jonesboro Heights High School. We'd have a doubleheader every year. The boys and the girls would play. And it was just so exciting to see all of the cars in the parking lot. People would be parked down on the road, you know, the highway, and it would just be packed with so many people, and and just so much excitement. And it was such excitement for the community because that was the first time that something like that had ever happened. So everybody was, you know, they were on board and they were very encouraging, and they would follow us to all the games, and it was such an exciting time, just, you know, to be among the first, you know, something of its kind like that.
You were known for having quite the shooting touch. Where did that develop? Where did you hone that skill? Because not everyone has that. Not everyone can have as great of a touch as you were known for having through high school and college. Where did you develop that from, Angela?
Well, I used to play with boys, and so they were shooting jump shots. And in order for me to get my shot up above some of them, I would have to jump, you know, as high as I could to get the shot off so that they wouldn't block it, because they were, you know, boys are certainly at a certain age, they're a little more stronger and a little more athletic than females are, so, and especially at that age. So I honed that by playing with a lot of the boys in the community.
And that's where the fluid shot came from, just maybe facing off against competitors that were maybe taller than you?
Yes, taller than me, yes, and able to jump too. So I'd have to elevate in order to, so that I could see above them and get my shot off.
When you played in high school, college basketball for women was still very much in its infancy, still trying to get off the ground. It had yet to become an NCAA-sanctioned national tournament. That would happen while you were at Louisiana Tech. So walk me through, what was recruiting like, and what was the idea like? I mean, when did it become kind of well-known that, hey, you know what, I have an opportunity to go play college basketball? I mean, today we kind of take that for granted. But back then, it was far, you know, it wasn't a priority, and it was far less common, so to speak. So what was that like, recruiting and having the opportunity to play college ball at all?
Well, I have I had a cousin at that time, Laverne Henderson, who played at Louisiana Tech, and also an excellent ball player out of Chatham, Belinda Jones, at that time, she had also gone to Louisiana Tech, so it wasn't foreign to me as far as you know, having a career after high school in basketball. And so by me seeing them, because I kind of followed them, I didn't really go to a lot of games because I was a lot younger, but I followed them, and my cousin went on to, she still holds the record for most rebounds in a game at 40 rebounds a game. And so after I saw, you know, what they had accomplished, I knew that I could possibly have a career also. And also in my junior year, I played on one of the international teams. That was my senior year. I played on one of the international teams, and it was very interesting that after that season, it was during the summer. So one or two of the coaches, they wanted to recruit me. You know, I was told this after the fact, but then they found out that I had signed with Louisiana Tech. So I don't think that I was, I guess evidently I wasn't well known outside of the state of Louisiana, but within the state of Louisiana, I believe people knew more about me than outside.
Was Louisiana Tech the only school that you ever even daydreamed or even considered going to?
Let's see. I thought about going to, and I don't know whether this was really thought about going to as much as really wanting to visit the university, and that was Delta State University, because at that time they were a big powerhouse, and they had Lucia Harris, who's probably one of the best to ever play the game, and Lucia came to Shady Grove High School, and you can imagine how excited I was to see Lucia Harris, because she was just on the cover of Ebony magazine, and I think I had that magazine, and so she came to visit, and I was so excited because she was a hero to me, because I had followed her career also, and so then my mother, father, my sister, and brother, we ended up taking a trip to Delta State, and we had a chance to tour the campus, and and meet with the coach and, you know, meet with Lucia. But in the end, it ended up being Louisiana Tech.
Tell me, what was it like playing for Sonya Hogg?
You know, she's a special lady because she, I would credit her with getting the type of players that she recruited to Tech to be able to play in the system that we played in. She knew exactly how to, you know, how to talk to people and, you know, how to present herself and how to make you feel comfortable. Because I remember when she recruited me, and she came to one of our games, and she walked in the door, and she had on this white mink coat. And so, you know, immediately all of the attention was over on her and because she had that kind of presence. And the thing that I really liked, one of the things that I really liked about her is that even though she was recruiting me, she also talked to my teammates too, just as if she were recruiting them too. So she didn't just make a beeline for me and ignore them. She made them feel welcome, and she made them feel special. And that was what I liked about her. She just has that type of personality, and she got the players there, the type of players there that would be able to play in the system that we played in. Because, as you know, Coach Barmore was the X's and O's guys and probably one of the best to ever coach the game. And, of course, you know, I'm a little biased when I say that. But he's probably one of the best motivators, you know, just competitors, and just knew how to get all that he could get out of each player. And he had the ability to make us buy into the system that he wanted us to play in. So every week or so, he would have our managers put up a sign or in the locker room. And two that I remember in particular, one was, "There is no I in team." And the second one was, It is amazing what can be accomplished when no one cares who receives the credit." And that was something I think that our team lived by because now in hindsight, I was thinking about this the other day, that we have four players that are in the Louisiana Tech University Athletic Hall of Fame. We've got three in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. We're actually, well, before with me, and then we have three in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, and then Kim Mulkey, of course, was just inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame, and both coaches Barmore and Hogue, they're in the Louisiana Tech University Athletic Hall of Fame, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, and then Coach Barmore is in the Naismith Hall of Fame. So you know, now in hindsight, as I look back on that, none of us really knew that at the time, but now in hindsight, you know, that was a special time, and it would take somebody, I think, like Coach Barmore to be able to pull out of us what he needed to pull out of us. And with so many talented players, and then getting us to, you know, to be comfortable in our role and not want to, you know, necessarily be the star and not getting upset if I wasn't getting the ball, you know, as much as I thought I should have. So it was just a very unique situation.
You know, you played with some of the greatest players to ever put on sneakers and step on a hardwood. Pam Kelly, Kim Mulkey, and of course, Janice Lawrence Braxton. Of those players that you played with there at Louisiana Tech, who was the best? Who was the one that you battled in practice or during drills or whatever it might be that you just sat back as a great competitor, as a champion yourself, and you went, "Wow, that's impressive. That's the person that I want to try to be. That's going to be the level of success. That's going to be the way to approach the game." Who was that you were teammates with that you felt that way about?
Oh, you know, I'd probably say all of them, because they, each of them had their own their own things that they brought to the game. So I wouldn't necessarily say one over the other, because Kim was a fierce competitor and motivator, and Pam was like a silent, she was quiet and humble, but yet fierce on the court. And then Janice was like, she didn't really let a whole lot bother her or anything like that. But once she got on the court, she was a fierce competitor. And then you didn't mention Lori Scott, but Lori Scott also was the defensive player of the team. Coach Barmore would always put put Lori on the best player on the other team. And a lot of times I would have to go up against Lori. Lori had these long arms and so that was tough for me to go up against Lori. So I can't say, you know, one over the other, because all of them were unique in their own way. I guess if I had to take one thing from each one of them, from Kim probably would be the fierce competitiveness, and Pam just being humble and fierce, and Janice just being the, you know, happy person that she is and a fierce competitor, and then Lori just the defensive side of it.
Angela, you guys were also known for a particular play that has now been taught over and over and over again, and that's the two down. Kind of explain that to us, to people that may not completely understand basketball terminology, basketball plays. What is that, and why were you guys so successful running it when you were on the court together?
Oh boy, if I can remember that, I think what that is that you would have like I'd be in the corner, and then you'd have two players come to set a screen. And I'd come off of that screen, and they would pass me the ball either for a jump shot, or I could drive into the basket, or I could even pass if somebody picked me up. I could pass to somebody under the basket. If that's what I'm remembering correctly, I think that's what it is.
Yes, ma'am, you're correct.
Okay.
Yes, you're correct. It was wildly effective. It still gets taught to this day, and you guys executed it so well. I guess my question to you is, you know, when you stepped on campus, you guys were just an absolute phenomenal group of players. I mean, your first season there, 78-79, the team goes 34-4. You guys finish as national runners-up. You lose to Old Dominion, who was a power at that time and would be until the 80s. You guys finished as runner-up at the AIAW National Tournament. That's before women's basketball was recognized by the NCAA with a tournament. Tell me a little bit about that first season. Great success. You guys finished as national runner-up, and you were a starter. You were a four-year starter at Louisiana Tech. What was that like, going from classy basketball to being a starter for one of the best teams in the country in college?
Well, it was exciting, especially, you know, being something new and something different. When Pam, Kelly, and I, when we started as freshmen together, we actually told the president, who was Dr. F.J. Taylor at the time, we told him that we were going to win the national championship. Now, I don't know whether he believed us or not, but we were serious about it. And even that first year, Pam Kelly didn't start, but she was the leading scorer. And so we kept winning and winning and winning. And at that time, they had all of these satellite tournaments that we'd have to play. So we didn't know where we were going next. It wasn't as organized, in my opinion, as it is now. But we kept winning. And one of the keys was we had a West Coast trip. And UCLA was one of the teams that we were going to play on this trip. So we went into Pauley Pavilion at UCLA, and we beat UCLA. And I think that was when people started taking us seriously. And so from then on, it was just, you know, like I said, we just kept winning, and it was just, it was so exciting just to be on that team and to know that we could, like we had told Dr. Taylor, that we could really win a national championship and be competitive on another level.
And that you were. After the first season there where you guys finished as national runners-up, the next season you're even better, 40-5 overall in 79-80. You end up losing in the Final Four in the semifinals there to Old Dominion once again. My question to you, Angela, is after that season, you guys took the program to a whole nother level in 80-81 and then 81-82, winning back-to-back national championships. What did the season ending with a loss to Old Dominion do for you guys as you headed into the offseason? Did it change anything with you? Did it make you as a competitor and your teammates work harder? And what was the mindset heading into the 80-81 season?
Well, I think for one thing, I think at that time, Kim Mulkey and Janice Lawrence joined the team, as well as Deborah Rodman. And so we just wanted to pick up where we left off, because we had come so close, we knew that there was a good possibility that we could win the following year. So, you know, of course we hated to lose, and we always hated to lose, but we also knew that that we could do it the next year. You know, we could actually win the national championship, just as Pam and I had told Dr. Taylor.
Did you guys think that you would go undefeated like you did?
You know, I didn't even think about it, but once we started winning so many games, we were like, oh, you know, maybe we can go undefeated. and even my junior year, I think we went 34-1. We lost one game to Old Dominion by 1 point in double overtime. And we came yay close to winning that game. And so after we lost that game, it was kind of like a reset. And then from then on, we didn't lose another game throughout my time at Tech, including my senior year, which we did go undefeated in my senior year. So it was kind of like a reset. And because I heard after the fact that some coaches said that Old Dominion beating Louisiana Tech was probably one of the worst things that could happen, because by us losing, it kind of took the pressure off of us, and then we were able to breathe and go on and win both national championships.
You guys put together a 54-game winning streak, and that would stand for decades. It finally would be snapped by UConn and Gino Amorara in 2003. When you guys were part of that streak, Angela, every time you rolled out and rolled the ball out to the court, so to speak, did you guys just know that you were going to win? And what does it take to put together a winning streak like that? What does it take in practice? What does it take in film session? What's all the extra stuff that's needed to play at that dominant of a level?
Well, you have, it's really kind of weird, because you have to be competitive and believe in yourself and in the team, but by the same token, not to the detriment of getting overconfident. And so Coach Barmore would never let us become overconfident. So, because I remember there were times where we'd win a game by 20 points or so, but because we didn't win it the right way, he would have us practicing after the game. So he would always do little things like that to keep us in the moment, and even not even look so much ahead, but stay in the moment and not get too overconfident, because any team on any given night or day can be beaten, no matter how good or bad you are. And so like I said earlier, he had that ability to, you know, to pull that out of us, and also to have us to believe in him and what he was saying. And so we were able to contain that. Of course, we were winning and we wanted to win. And And I do remember some pressure in trying to keep winning, but it never was with me, and I'm sure with any of my teammates, it never was to the point of being overconfident, because I don't ever remember us talking about the win streak or, oh, we're going to win this one. We need to win the next 10 to do so and so. It was never anything like that.
You guys also win the first national championship from the NCAA when they first had the first NCAA women's tournament, and you were part of that as well. Looking back now, maybe you didn't realize it at the time, but looking back now, that's a pretty significant honor to have, to be part of. How proud are you that you were kind of part of that history, so to speak?
You know, I'm very proud of that because I think that our team was, you know, one of the pioneers, and our team picture is actually in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. And so from that standpoint, will never be forgotten because we were the last, we won the last AIAW national championship and the first women's NCAA championship. And that's one record that'll always stand. It'll never be broken.
Something else that stands out to me about your career, and look, it was phenomenal. You're part of a program during your time which went 143-10. You only lost 10 games in an entire collegiate career. 4 Final Fours, 2 national championships. You were also, obviously, the national championship game MVP. But the thing that stands out to me more than that, Angela, personally, is you earned first-team All-American honors in a season where, because of the wealth of talent and how you guys played, you saw your time, you played less, you didn't score as much, you didn't fill up the stat sheet as much as you'd done in previous seasons, yet you still earned first-team All-American honors. That really stands out to me because it shows an unselfishness on your part, but also just how great you were even when you had time and shots taken away from you.
Yeah, that's very true. And during that time, I really tried to focus on my defense. I think that I really improved a lot on my defense over the course of my career at Tech. And so I focused on defense and trying to get steals. And because the jump shot may be off, but if my body's in good shape, then defense should never be off. And so I focused on that. And I was surprised that I became an All-American my senior year, but definitely, I was excited about it and honored and thankful also.
For you and your Lady Texter teammates, Louisiana Tech, Old Dominion, Tennessee, you know, there's a few programs that are considered to be the benchmark programs, the programs that laid the foundation, were pioneers, not only for women's basketball in their own state, but for the country. And you hear so many players over the years that mention those older teams like the Lady Texters, like Old Dominion. What does it mean now that you see how much the sport has grown, Angela, and how much more respect it gets these days, and the fact that the WNBA has hit a milestone that many people thought it never would as a professional league? How much growth you've seen from the women's side for basketball? What does it mean to be part of that, to be part of that foundation that kind of opened up the door, broke down the door, if you will, for women's basketball in this country?
Well, the way I look at it is that somebody has to be the pioneer, you know, one of the pioneers, and we along with Tennessee and Old Dominion and USC and the USC's and some of these other teams, we were the pioneers, and women's basketball has come a long way, and because of, you know, some of the things that we did in the day, you know, the young girls watched us, and that motivated them to want to play, and they in turn played and motivated somebody, you know, other young girls, and so it goes on and on, and so I'm very excited and just really amazed at how far women's basketball has grown and where it is today. And not only that, just the athleticism of the women today. I mean, we probably have probably two or three women in the WNBA that can dunk the basketball and dunk it with ease. So the sport has really come a long way, and they're getting a lot of followers and a lot, you know, a lot more respect also.
What does it mean to you all these years later to still be known as a lady texter?
Well, it means a lot to me because the lady texters were known, you know, around the country. So when they talked about our team, it was the Louisiana Tech Lady Texters, and we are the pioneers, and even today there's people that I meet, once they find out that I played for Louisiana Tech, they'll say, oh, I remember that team, that was a good team, and people that were a part of the Tech program or even from a distance, they still fondly remember the Lady Texters, and so I wear that name proudly because, you know, I'm once a Lady Texter, always a Lady Texter.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, you had an opportunity, you know, to be part of the Olympics, but obviously the United States banned those games. Walk me through that process of thinking about having the possibility of representing your country for Team USA and then not having that opportunity?
Well, I really wanted to play in the Olympics, and I remember probably I could have made the team probably in 1980, but that year we had played 45 games. We were 40 and 5. We won 40 and lost 5. And so after that season, everybody on the team was so tired. And so in hindsight, I probably should have pushed through and tried to make the team, but I didn't because my body was just kind of worn down. And so, the next Olympics, I had been out of school 2 years. And so in between those 2 years after I graduated and the time for the Olympic trials, I tried to keep in shape and do things. And so I made the first cut. But then I was eliminated in the second cut because I just hadn't played competitively, and I'm sure I probably was like a step behind and everything. But at least I gave it a shot.
You also could have had an opportunity to play pro ball. You turned it down to go into business. You became a CPA, a career path that you held for decades, even to this day. My question to you quickly is, why did you turn down playing pro ball?
Well, at that time there was no pro ball here. I received a phone call from Italy in one morning, and they wanted me to make a decision by that evening.
They called that morning and were like, "Hey, we want you to come join the team. We need an answer by dinner time."
Yeah, right. And so I said, "Okay, for a decision, you know, that important." I said, I can't make a decision that fast. And so that's why I turned it down.
So you turned it down, but you had a great backup plan because you also got your master's degree. What appealed to you about becoming a CPA? And it's something, obviously, you have a great passion for. You had immense amount of success. Why did you decide to go down that career path after you graduated?
Well, because I like I minored in math at Louisiana Tech. So I love numbers and I love solving problems and that's how my mind operates. And I felt that that accounting was probably the closest thing that I could get to continue working with numbers. And then I also won an NCAA postgraduate scholarship to attend graduate school. And at that time, Mr. Smolinski was the head of the accounting department, and he talked me into coming to a graduate school, and he also said that I could be his graduate assistant, and so that's what I did. I was his graduate assistant and obtained my MBA and also kept up with the also have the ability to continue to work with numbers, which I love.
Your career took you all across the globe, correct, Angela? I mean, you worked for the likes of multiple big-time companies, Coca-Cola. You worked for Motown. Just tell me about, you know, how rewarding it was, your professional career, which had nothing to do with basketball, but you had immense amounts of success that took you all across the globe.
Yes, my one of my first, I guess, big jobs was working at Motown, and so that was very very interesting because I had a chance, an opportunity to meet, you know, a lot of the artists that won the Motown label, like Diana Ross and Stevie Wonder, and just some of the ones that I grew up listening to. And so that was very exciting for me. And then I had a chance to see how the music industry works and who's making money and who's not making money, how it's made, and artists really make money if they can write and they can produce and they can sing. If they can do all three of those, then they make the money. If you're just singing, then you're singing really to be able to pay back money that they've given you up front. So once you recoup that, then you can start making money. But I learned all of that. I didn't know that. And then after that, I worked at Coca-Cola, which is a manufacturing company, and that was also interesting. Just seeing the amount of Cokes that, you know, they go out every day, and seeing how they're manufactured, and also when I was at Louisiana Tech, there was a local Coca-Cola manufacturing plant, and they actually produced a Coca-Cola bottle, I think, for 2 years. In commemoration of our two national championships. And I think they also did some local bottles for Eddie Robinson and Coach Eddie Robinson at Grambling State University and some others. So when I went to Coke, my mind went back to, you know, to those Coca-Cola bottles.
When you got the phone call, Angela, that you were going to be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame finally after all these years, I know the ceremony's been delayed because of COVID-19 last year, and it's been pushed back essentially a full year, but you're going to be enshrined. You're going to be inducted. When you got that phone call, what was your reaction? How did you feel?
Well, you know, I was, first of all, we were in Washington, D.C. My husband and I had, we had taken his parents and his aunt to visit D.C., and so I got the phone call, and I almost didn't answer the phone because it was a 318 number, and my brother still lives in Louisiana, and he sometimes calls from other people's phone numbers. So I said, I better answer this. This could be my brother. So I answered it, and it was Doug. And so he explained to me, you know, well, actually he was doing a whole lot of talking, and then in my mind I was like, okay, so what? What is he getting ready to say? You know, I didn't have any idea. And so then finally, you know, he told me, and I asked him, are you serious? And he said, I'm serious. And I just didn't know what to say, because that was the last thing that I was expecting to happen. Because once you get to, you know, to my age, you know, I was like, well, you know, maybe I've been forgotten, and so that's what it's always good. At least for me, it was good to know that I had not been forgotten, and I'm so appreciative of it, and especially having attended a high school that's probably about an hour and 15 minutes from Natchitoches, you know, just right down the road. So I'm a real Louisiana girl, and So it means just so much to me, and I just wish that my mother could be here, you know, to experience it, because I know that she would be so happy and so excited, because she was also one of my she was one of my a big motivator for me.
So how many people are you going to have? How many people of the family and friends and old classmates are going to be taking over Natchitoches here in a couple of weeks, Angela?
You know, I don't know. I just want to be surprised, and I hope in a good way. I tell you, though, some of them have said they're coming. So I just really want to be surprised. But you know, I'm so excited that even if I was the only one in there, you know, it wouldn't matter because I'm excited and you know, excited just to be honored.
Well, Angela, it is a recognition and honor that's a long time coming. You belong in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Can't wait to see you take the stage on that Saturday night and officially become a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. You deserve it. Thank you so much for making the time out today to talk to us here on the Rap Game podcast. It's greatly appreciated. And once again, congratulations on becoming a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer.
And thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
That's Angela Turner Johnson joining us here on the Rap Game podcast. Woo, Hall of Famer. Look at the career. Long time coming. Probably should have been put in a long time ago. Part of the great Lady Texters foundation, tradition, history there. Four-year starter, scored over 2,200 points, went to four Final Fours, went to not one, not two, but three national championship games, won two national titles, the last one of the AIAW era and the first one of the NCAA era, first team All-American, one of the best to ever lace up sneakers and play basketball in the state of Louisiana. And she gets to go into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in Natchitoches in less than 2 weeks from right now. That's going to do it for this episode of the Rap Game podcast. Look, if you want to catch any previous episodes, simply go to 1037thegame.com. Click on the Rap Game podcast tab. That's all you got to do. You can listen for free. All the previous episodes are archived, so you can listen to them at your convenience. We appreciate you checking us out. Until next time, be safe out there, be kind to one another, and I'll talk to you soon.